From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense.
This week, Joey asks me about funny women at work, and I ask Joey about eyebrows.
Woo! Oh, hello.
Hello.
This is what a Joey sounds like.
This is what a special guest, Katie, sounds like.
And this is what an executive producer, an on-air personality, talent extraordinaire, Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
Housekeeping? Should we do housekeeping?
Housekeeping!
If you have questions, topic suggestions, an invitation to a cool party where there's cheese and crudité.
Corrections department.
You can email us at criticalnonsense@sylvainlabs.com. We like emails.
Yeah.
Reasonable
quantities of emails.
Yeah. Nice emails. Tell us that we sound smart and then, you know, like feed us the shit sandwich. You sound really smart, but your show is terrible, but we really like you.
You have a heated pool, you should definitely email us.
Yes.
And invite us for a good swim.
Yeah. And also, you know, tell a friend. We have a bunch of new people that are listening to the show, so tell someone about it, and then it'll be a party in your ears. Now, two important things.
Yeah, two important things or on two important things?
Oh,
yikes.
On two.
Never mind.
So, I read an article, as all of these seem to start. I can read. It was on Harvard Business Review, but it came from a group of researchers at the University of Arizona. So you don't get all that credit, Harvard. Take that. And it was about women at work not being allowed to be funny. And it made me upset.
The article said, women, you can't be funny?
Yeah, it said, don't do it. We don't appreciate it.
Wow.
No, it was... So the article was based on a study where people listened to men and women leaders give speeches in two different scenarios where they were asked to be funny or asked not to be funny. Like the script that they were reading of giving a speech had like jokes in it or didn't. And in the study, unfortunately, found that men who use humor in this work environment are found to be like, you know, have more qualities of leadership and expertise and strength, whereas women who are reading the script with jokes in it were found to, you know, have basically the opposite, you know, lower credibility, lower expertise scores just based on perception, even though they were reading the same script. And it made me, you know, take pause on my own privilege for sure, but also, you know, humor is important to me, and I wanted to talk about why is it that it seems that women can't be funny at work.
Can we back up for a second and talk about what humor means in this scenario? I happen to have this article in front of me.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's important for the listeners to be able to contextualize their reactions.
Yes.
And I quote.
And I quote.
One version included five humorous statements sprinkled throughout the presentation. For example, the store manager began the presentation with a short, self-deprecating joke. So last night, my husband gave me some good advice about this presentation. He said, whatever you do, don't try to be too charming, witty, or intellectual. Just be yourself.
Oh, no.
All I want to say is I do have some doubts about, you know,
The quality of this study. Yeah. Yeah. This is not late night stand up quality.
I mean, that just makes me sad. I would feel sad listening to someone say that in a presentation.
Yeah.
I understand that in the context of this study, when men said it, viewers or participants thought that they were being charming, and that women said it, they thought they were incompetent. Like, I get that that's what the study is saying, but I'm saying that my reaction is cringes.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, this made me really like take a minute to reflect, because for me, humor, I don't think I'm a funny person. I want to make that point clear, but I think humor is like one of my core values. Like when I'd done like the VIA Signature Strengths Test, which is like University of Pennsylvania, like happiness index about like what are the most important set of values to you. Humor is my number one. Like I enjoy being like playful, even if I'm not funny. And I do it at work all the time. And so the idea that I'm getting potentially some positive benefit from a thing that makes me feel better, whereas women are potentially being dinged for that same behavior, was like, you know, like there are lots of things that make you check your privilege, but this was like a punch in the face for me. It made me start wondering, like, in environments that I've been in, am I responding that way?
Is this an implicit bias in you?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm curious, right, because it was the study's finding was equal for men and women. Women were dinging the women in the same way that men were, which was also like
dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is similar to the thing about how on the New York City subways, the different voices that give information versus directives on the subway. You have women that read anything that's just informative or telling you about updates, but male voices are the ones that tell you to be careful or step away from XYZ. And it's because in testing, they found that people listened more when the man told you, you know, told you what to do, basically.
I did not know that. Yeah.
Fuck
something
you,
else to be mad about.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, do you feel that in, like, if you're reflecting on past bosses, like, is that something that you feel like you do? Like, for me, it's like, now I'm really interrogating this because
what's hard is this, I feel like we would need to talk to very funny people or people who rely so heavily on that mm-hmm. we can't imagine that not making its way into their work.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, obviously the best scenario is like for women who are employed full time trying to be funny, mm-hmm. right? Like female stand up comedians, I guess, would be really interesting to hear speak on this subject, because obviously that their whole line of work surrounds an uphill battle against like what the standards of funny women are supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the study and in the article that was actually, you know, this, you can find the information about this everywhere and in the way that the PR circuit works, like every news organization has picked up this story. But I think the HBR article was actually written by the study's authors. And they talk about, you know, maybe this is only relevant in first impressions of people that you don't know. And they go into gender stereotypes around how men get credit for being like high achieving and ambitious, whereas women get gender stereotypes around like family values and things that sort of are potential detractors from seeing someone as like dedicated to the work. And so you're kind of fighting against that. But in a scenario where you're working with someone and you see them kind of, you know, succeeding on a day-to-day basis or working long hours or something, then in that scenario, maybe humor wouldn't be seen as a detractor because you have other data. But even that point means that women have to work harder in order to be able to be funny or use humor. Sorry, funny is like a different concept, but to use humor in the workplace. And they also talk about how like humor in the workplace from leaders is like a very successful tool of relieving tension, increasing motivation, like all of these things. And men have that tool and women don't.
What about the industry that this was tested under? Would this be different if mm-hmm. it weren't a, you know, buttoned up business environment and something a little bit more progressive? Basically to say, is this maybe actually changing faster than what the study may show?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this actually when you, Joey, were mentioning checking your privilege and checking your own biases. I was thinking about an experience I had last weekend. I went to a class on foraging and...
Wait, pause. Where was the class? What did you forage?
It was at Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. And we didn't actually pick or eat anything.
What?
But we learned how to identify. We learned like what are the characteristics of a safe ID? Like, what do you need to be able to check off in order to feel confident that you know what a plant is? And then we learned to recognize some plants. And then we did comparisons. And then we learned like where to look for certain types of plants during specific seasons. It was great.
In the great urban jungle.
Yeah. And, but the instructor was a woman, and I noticed pretty quickly into the class that, so it was a walking class, right? Cause we were trekking all around the garden, and we would, she would spot something and we would walk up to it and she would describe it and we would all kneel down and touch it and smell it. And then she would close with a quote unquote amusing anecdote. And I noticed that this was a formula after like maybe the third stop. And I was really annoyed by it. Like it felt like she had prepared an anecdote for every plant that we were going to talk about. And it was really getting under my skin. And I was like, can we just talk about plants and like you not make weird political jokes or like, you know, like, yeah. I just don't want to be here talking about these things with you. That's me. I'm a woman checking another woman for using humor in the workplace.
Humor in the foraging workplace.
Well, that's what I mean. That's a pretty progressive environment, you know, the wide, wide world.
But what's interesting even about this story that you're telling us is that it wasn't even the humor that bothered you, is that it felt planned.
Inauthentic.
Forced,
it was poorly delivered. For me, that's the bottom line.
It all came down to delivery. Yeah.
Well, like, are you a funny person? Does using humor work for you? Because if it doesn't, people can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like, and that's the distinction though, because like, I think humor is sort of seeing when moments are amusing or making something lighthearted or kind of, you know, using something to deflate the tension or pressure in a room versus, I think being funny is more of a construct, right? Like stand-up comedians are telling the same jokes every night and like workshopping things. Maybe that woman is still workshopping her Dandelion
Maybe
Greens joke.
Moonlighting.
Oh, totally. She's like, at day I forage. At night, I take the stage.
But I don't, you know, we are increasingly seeing more like in quotes girl boss types of figures that historically we haven't, and my hope in reading something like this was that the tide is turning, that dynamics and stereotypes are shifting such that in a generation or something those same things wouldn't exist, especially when you're seeing things like you know, there are a lot of women who are choosing not to have children. And the more that you see women outside of the context of that sort of construct of like, you're, you know, my mom was like a homekeeper, like a caregiver or whatever. Like when you start seeing women outside of that context, then you can start to break down some of the biases. Maybe I'm not sure. It just felt like, you know, I think about someone like Chelsea Handler, who seems to embody both of the stereotypes that are talked about in the study, of that she's like high achieving, ambitious, like making things happen, and is also like breaking sort of that like caregiver stereotype, and is also extremely funny. And so like seeing more and more folks in those scenarios hopefully breaks down the bias that. But also, I think it takes like self-reflection. I don't know.
Should we have a moment of reflection?
Or a moment of jokes?
Oh, yeah. We should definitely have a moment of jokes.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Katie has a running list of dad jokes on her phone.
See? Even dad jokes. Yikes.
Well, this implies that they're bad. So it's stereotyping running the other way.
Yeah.
As if all dads are terrible.
Bad jokers.
Okay.
And now a reading. Katie, say that.
Here's some a reading.
It's more awkward now that you've told people that I'm reading them.
Your delivery was a bit stilted.
All right. What do you call a fake pasta?
I don't know.
An impasta.
Like the voice. You have to tell it with the voice.
Oh my God. Can you hear the cringing?
No, it's good. It's good. All right. Okay. Okay.
I'm what sweating.
What did the buffalo say to his son when he left for college?
What?
Bye, son. Can we do one more? Can we do one more? Okay. Did you hear about the restaurant on the moon? Great food, no atmosphere.
Ultimate review.
I give it 5 stars.
Yeah.
But there were
two thumbs up.
There were Uggs on both sides, and like, one was pleasure and one was pain.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about brows.
I too cannot wait to talk about brows. And luckily, that's what we're doing right now. Joey, thank you for participating in this great moment.
Sitting idly by, curiously making faces and having nothing to contribute.
Don't be idle. You have brows?
Yeah. You too have brows. Two of them.
Everybody has brows and they all stink.
Not everybody has brows.
Oh, is that not the dad joke? That one.
Was that a joke?
Was it?
To play off a joke.
Oh, no.
Nope.
Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got them and they all stink.
I see. This is a scenario where a man is making a joke and is
not funny.
Not landing. I perceive you as less productive.
Not a good leader.
This week, an email chain was going around our office about pet peeves. And someone mentioned how...
I was not on this email chain.
Yes, you were.
I don't think it was about pet peeves.
It wasn't about pet peeves. It was actually about birthdays, but led to a conversation about pet peeves. And then one of the pet peeves listed was something along the lines of, what's the deal with everybody being so excited about eyebrows? And this got me so riled up because if anyone knows me, I am very into eyebrows. And I know that doesn't make me a unique person. There is an eyebrow moment that we are experiencing as a culture, at least in the United States right now, as evidenced by, think the Glossier Boy Brow product. Think the Benefit Brow Bar. Think Korean eyebrow mask paint, which actually is the craziest thing. You paint on a colored something, like you paint on like a dark brown, which dries into a mask, and then you peel it off and it has tinted your eyebrow hairs.
Oh my God.
Whatever that thing, like whatever the color of
that paint
was.
Is it tinting your hair or is it tinting the skin behind your hair?
I think it's the hairs though.
I can't wait to try.
Yeah. Anyone who's really interested in Korean eyebrow beauty product, please correct me if I'm wrong. All of this is to say, there's a lot happening in the world of brows right now. But if you take a look at 20 years ago eyebrows, it was all the rage to have these like tiny little worms crawling across your head, you know, or like these very skinny, you know.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because at that time that was what was beautiful and attractive. And yet now brows look completely different, and yet those are what are beautiful and attractive. And so in the process right now where I am working on growing out beautiful large brows, I can't help but wonder what drives our beauty obsessions and crazes.
This makes me think of the Hunger Games, like, or the Fifth Element, or like these future scenarios where sort of beauty crazes like go so far that they like move into absurdity. Like it's sort of the way that we paint the picture of future societies of having like, you know, like painting your eyebrows different colors feels like it's like
we're getting
a step in the path to like having, you know, like different color changing eyebrows every day, which maybe is not a bad thing, but that's like the first thing that I think of.
Is that what they do in the Hunger Games? I need to rewatch.
In
I missed the part where they're dying.
I missed
their
brows.
In the Capitol. Yeah.
The Capitol, you're so right.
Got it.
Yeah. But the, you know, like the beauty standard thing is sort of interesting. It just feels like it's always just a constant pendulum swing. Although some of the stuff now, like that we have with the technology that's at our disposal, like microblading. What is it called?
Yeah. Oh man, you did research. Oh,
microblading is basically where you tattoo your eyebrows.
Oh, dope.
However, microblading is more typically associated with the technique, and so you don't actually always need to tattoo, but you can also just paint it on. But it's basically taking very tiny brush strokes to recreate the brow, as opposed to filling it in with a powder or something like that. So it makes it look like little hairs.
Very real.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's but there are like little blade ones that do cut on your eyebrows to make it look like hair and fill it with ink. And it lasts for like a few years.
Wait.
It's typically done by more by Asian women because they tend to have thinner brows. So they want to fill them in. And
that just made me think, when are we getting Rogaine for brows?
Oh, it's already a thing.
Is it? Okay, great.
Well, it's for there's Rogaine for eyelashes, which makes your eye color change, right?
Does it?
Yeah, that's like one of the potential side effects is like that your eye color can change.
Wait, what is your eye color based on biologically?
It's pigment. It's there's a few different types of pigment, but it's pigment like in your skin.
So why would this product change that?
Oh, goodness.
How could this happen?
I don't like the sounds of that.
But the transitioning of beauty standards is interesting to me in the way that like the transition of what is in style or tasteful at any time. Like I think the reason why the pendulum swings is inevitably some sort of generationality. Like you don't want to look like your mom looked, or you don't want to look like the previous generation looked. And so you rebel just to what the generation before that looked like, so that you're different in some way.
I have an alternate thought.
Yeah.
I was listening to another podcast recently where they were talking about taste in television or like the popularity of certain types of television shows. So now is a moment where there are a lot of television shows about the afterlife.
Yeah. The Good Place.
The Good Place. I should know more names after I say a lot of things.
That's it. A lot like this one.
They named a handful. But The Good Place in particular was the topic of the show, in that it's about the afterlife and it's also like a raucous and absurd comedy.
Yeah.
And one of the theories discussed during that conversation was about the taste in topic and tone of television laddering up to larger cultural movements. Mm-hmm. So like we're in dark times right now.
Yeah.
And so people want comfort and they want escapism and they want fantasy that allows them to step outside of, you know, what they're living in day to day.
Well, what's Game of Thrones then? That's basically reality.
Right. I don't think this is like blanket statement, right? But it made me think of this because I think there are cultural movements at play that would lend themselves to a more accommodating view of natural body hair. Right. Eyebrows included, but like armpits and legs for women as well. And body acceptance and et cetera, et cetera. Like, yeah, probably this is tied to generational shifts and reactions to parents and reactions to the beauty industry. But it also feels like it's tied to something bigger.
Yeah. And that sort of connection about, you know, how it's impossible to extract the what's happening in culture in the States, for example, with then ultimately our beauty trends or our movie tastes or whatever those things are. I think it's also interesting to think about how there are other sort of outside variables that can affect those things. Like there is an association of French culture with a very specific type of beauty and makeup style that also changes with the times, but I think there are also sort of universal and consistent things about that, where in the same way that I would say it's probably reasonable to guess that the United States beauty trends are typically just extreme in all forms, whether it's extremely thin brows or extremely thick brows, and there's something very minimal and romantic about maybe what is considered a very French makeup look, or, you know, the way that certain cultures dress. There's, I think, there's definitely an element of things that are happening and changing constantly, but I also think there are fixed associations that cultures have with beauty.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Speaking of the French, do you guys know why it is that the French only have one egg for breakfast?
No, why?
Tell us.
Because one egg is enough.
That is subtle.
Sorry, Joey.
I perceive you as a leader.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say it's sort of interesting in historical times, not being like wildly historical, but I think also even like thinking back to Victorian era times, like you've had some sort of mass cultural standard in one way, shape, or form that is sort of a signal to everyone, right? Like broadcast television in particular was this thing that, you know, if I'm thinking about like Ross and Rachel, or like Rachel and Monica, like having haircuts that then become like,
oh yeah, I had one of those.
The haircut du saison, see, bringing in the French.
Yeah.
No, but we're having less and less of that mass media effect. We're also having sort of an increased multicultural conversation within media. Like there's more media with more figures across different ethnicities and backgrounds, which is sort of allowing, you know, like I'm thinking about it's really easy in a scenario where a white woman is the figure that is setting some standard for another white woman to copy because they have maybe similar like face structure, similar eyebrows. So it's something you can accomplish. Whereas, you know, if you are a different ethnicity, it makes it more difficult. Like you know, like it's very difficult for a black woman to have the Monica haircut. But as you increasingly have a more multicultural, like mass media apparatus, or that we're just fracturing out of mass media and everyone is able to consume content with a figure, or increasingly able to consume content with a figure that is more representative of them, you have maybe less mimicking of some, or like aping of some single beauty standard.
Yeah, maybe. But I also immediately, when I think of the current eyebrow trend, I associate it with two particular celebrity ladies in the U.S., Cara Delevingne, model, and Lily Collins, and their brow strength. And basically, it was like a total ripple effect. Everyone wanted brows like Cara. Or similarly with butts and Kim Kardashian and Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
And the whole butt implant trend thing and, you know, fascination with.
Go on about butt implants.
I don't know if I have much more to say.
No, I mean, I think, right, like there are sort of a lot of the beauty standards are around amplification of some sort of like an innate signal, right? Like butts are inherently like an innate signal and you're amplifying that. But in the same way that like,
what are brows signaling?
They're drawing attention to your eye in different ways, I think. I don't know if that signaling, but like the way that people are, you know, more likely to get lip injections or doing like the Kylie Jenner challenge and just bruising their whole face.
Yikes.
That those are like signals, and it's just what is the signal that is popular at the time, maybe, or what is the approach to sending a signal that way?
Is all of this coming back to reproduction?
I think it kind of does.
Just so I know.
Yeah.
But we did talk about that a little bit prior to coming into the room today about, you know, what of this is driven by culture or what's happening in society right now versus what is biological. And at least to me, it seems it can't possibly be driven by biology alone, especially with this pendulum that's swinging. That just can't be the case. And yet we're so supercharged that even to the point you were making earlier, Joey, you were saying, you know, maybe because we're seeing more figures, we're maybe diversifying what the expectations we have are of women of other cultures or even people of other cultures. And yet I was telling Katie also prior to this that there was this huge sort of backlash to Malala Yousafzai, who is known for so many amazing things. And there were all these dude trolls who were like, your unibrow is so annoying.
I told Jess when she mentioned this, she mentioned Malala unibrow and like ripple effect or something. And I was like, are people copying Malala's unibrow? Because I'm here for it. I'm ready. I can't I honestly can't believe it's the other way. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think there's always a signal that people are choosing to amplify because that is the fashionable signal. Like, I'm even thinking in more sexually repressed times, like Victorian era England.
You're thinking a lot about Victoria.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's like an interesting one because it was so sexually repressed, but they were still sending all of these like weird, subtle sexual signals. Like there were those things like the fake butt shelf that was part of their outfit that was like still
I love that phrase.
The butt shelf?
Fake butt shelf.
I don't know what it's called.
As opposed to an authentic shelf, which is something totally different.
Yeah, it was like two butt cheek lumps that stuck out the back of your like petticoats or whatever it was. But like even in that case, that is still choosing like at that time, sending a signal around having a big butt, even in a repressed way, was the thing. And we've gone through eras where people, you know, like there was a big wave in the 90s around breast implants or things like that. That doesn't seem like it, you know, people obviously still do that, but it was like a thing in the 90s. And maybe now it is around butts, like you said, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a separate butt moment happening. But I guess all of this is to say, you know, from Victorian era times to, you know, butt workout videos in 2019, I think all of that exists simultaneously to a world where, like, why does having more hair in between your two brows that otherwise you just naturally have to extricate from your skin holes? Why is that not a consistent and universal fixed beauty construct, right? If that is a symbol of you, you know, virility, fertility, fecundity, as you said, Joey, the other day. Right. In the same way that there are certain things consistent about U.S. beauty standards or French beauty standards. Why can't having full brows just stay for good?
Full brows stay. Yeah. I mean, I think the discussion is that there's just a lot of variation in human morphology. Right. And the normal sits somewhere and you can sit on either side of that normal. And ultimately, everyone wants to get closer to the normal. Like, you know, in general, I think women don't have, like, when you sit at that normal, don't have a unibrow, right? Like, across the entire population of women. But there are a lot of women who do. Like, I personally have a unibrow, although not.
I'm looking really closely at your eyebrows right now.
I pluck my brow.
There you go.
I was told by some woman in my life when I was, like, 12, like, you need to take care of that.
Right.
But there is sort of that swing. Like, I was reading a paper when you talked about this as the subject, Jess, around sort of the nakedness of humans coming out of when we started becoming bipedal, because we weren't showing as much like of our sexual parts when we're standing up to each other. And so skin disappeared as a way to signal like the nakedness of genital skin.
Wait, what? We were just loping around with everything.
Yeah, like before? When you walk on fours, like your stuff hangs out, and when you're walking on twos, it doesn't. And so then there's theories in evolutionary biology around your hair disappearing as a form of replacing the nakedness of estrous skin, like that. And so I think like there is, even in the eyebrow, I think it still does come back ultimately to sexuality. Like, we are still animals who are driven to like find mates and reproduce. And even if we kind of evolve the standards, like, it's still there.
I'm not in charge of this conversation, but I feel like that's where it has to end.
with Joey's Freudian postulations. Yeah, you're right.
It's not Freudian. Yeah. It was evolutionary biology. Yep.
Anyways, brow power. Thanks, guys.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
We'd like to thank guest commentator Katie Sadow. We'd also like to thank executive producer and skin hole promoter Jess Vander.
That is weird. And we'd like to thank sound engineer Alex Contell.
Designer Nora Mestrich for making all the designs and playing all the hits.
Totally. And production help from Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Baum.
And as always, thanks, Elaine.
Thank you.
Special thanks.
Special thank yous.
We got them.
We totally have them.
We'd like to thank Dad Jokes.
Always. I'm always thanking Dad Jokes. As I like to call them, knee slappers.
Yeah.
Knee slappers.
Like, oh, that's a knee slapper. Here I am laughing so hard. I'm slapping my knees.
I'd like to thank Good Tweezers.
Mm-hmm. Tweezerman. Did you know that they have a policy for life of sharpening your tweezers?
Are you kidding me?
Just send them in. So
I've learned so much about brow care.
I would like to thank whoever told me that I needed to pluck my unibrow when I was 12, either my mom or my cousin or someone.
I don't want to thank them, Joey.
Yeah. Maybe we want to see that.
Let your brow be your brow. Free.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm naturally working with.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have to tell you, it's likely that you're never going to find out.
It's too late now.
It's too late. Like, it's not going to come back.
I'm also cool with that, I think.
I'd like to thank Malala, just generally.
That's Malala
Yousafzai.
Yeah.
Corrections department.
Is it
on your pronunciation?
Yikes. I apologize. That is a fourth yikes for me today. I would like to thank funny women everywhere.
Yes.
I'd like to thank the University of Arizona
for parties, pools.
You know, for
their basketball scandal.
Well, what's that?
They got in trouble with the FBI for bribing NCAA basketball players.
Yeah, I don't know.
None of those things seem worth thanking them for.
I
rescind my thank you to the University of Arizona.
You get nothing.
Yeah.
You too, Harvard. None for you.
And I'd like to thank this ending. Bye.
Brow power.